It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Fight Club. I'm Gareth A. Davis. It's the last show of the current series, episode 12. We've got a bumper show for you coming up. Moses Itauma, the brilliant, sensational young heavyweight, joins us. Yep, he wants to be a world champion quicker than Mike Tyson was. Frank Warren joins us to talk about the controversial events of the weekend. Mick Hennessy's daughter, Fran Hennessy, is turning pro. And Dr. Mohamed Eniat, a sports scientist who has analysed the findings on Conor Benn, also joins us. All that and more coming up on this week's Fight Club. Well, it's episode 12 already, the end of the first series of Fight Club via Boxing Social, and we have a bumper show for you today. I'm delighted to say, potentially, the future of the heavyweight division is in the studio with me today. Enrico Moses Itauma, otherwise known as Moses
Itauma.
The Wrecking Ball.
The Wrecking Ball, yeah, we can go with that.
You're 18 years of age.
Yep.
You've already had 4 pro fights.
Yep.
You used to spar with Joe Joyce, run off after school, age 15, to spar with Joe Joyce. It's incredible, this story.
No, it's mad when you say it like that, but I never really thought of it like when I was younger. So, I guess it was just another Tuesday evening for me.
Could you have ended up in rugby or athletics or mixed martial arts? Have we captured you in boxing by chance, or would you think you were always destined to be a boxer? How did it all begin for you?
Well, I started boxing at the age of 9, and then my first couple of sessions, I was literally threw up, and I was like, yeah, I'm not boxing no more. And me and my middle brother, Samuel, we started playing football. And then I literally just got bored of football quickly, so I just went back into boxing. But while I was doing boxing, I was a very good 800 meter runner. I was 2-time national champion at rowing. So
You didn't go on a rugby field ever?
Yeah, one time when my PE teacher was begging me. And it's literally just because I was big and I was playing rugby, I was running, everyone was jumping on top of me, but because I was just massive.
Bigger than everyone else.
Bigger than everyone else. I'd just be running with like 4 or 5 kids on top of me, and I'm literally just got the rugby ball. But I never really went into rugby that much.
So you're 9. Are you bigger than everyone else even age 9 or not?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like height-wise, yeah. But yeah. I was tall and skinny, really, so... Yeah.
You're still tall and skinny, you know. Yeah. Have you not realised that? No, you're a man mountain. You're an incredible size for your age. Mm. So you start at 9. Mm. Where were you growing up at the time?
So at this time, I was in Chatham, Kent. So yeah, I was born in Slovakia, lived there till 2008, 2009 roughly, and then moved to Luton Road on Chatham. But if anyone knows Luton Road, it's not the best part.
So you were born in Czech Republic?
No, in Slovakia.
In Slovakia, sorry. Yeah, you were born in Slovakia. I don't know why I said Czech Republic. So you're born in Slovakia.
That's right.
How does that come about? Why were you born in Slovakia?
No, my mum's Slovak, my dad's Nigerian.
Yeah.
And
how did they meet?
I don't know. But what I do know is that they communicated through Russian. So my mum learned Russian in school. My dad lived in Moscow for 5 years. And yeah, they both knew Russian. And obviously my mum and dad didn't know English. Well, my dad knew English, my mum never. And yeah, they communicated through Russian, and my dad eventually taught my mum to speak English through Russian.
Boxing's a global sport with global warriors.
Of course.
You were born as a child of the universe, it seems.
It's mad.
Things from everywhere.
Literally. Yeah, like I said, I'm grateful for the life I've had. Like, obviously we had to move out of Slovakia because, like, I don't know, times have changed. People are better there, but I guess they weren't used to seeing mixed race black faces. So, yeah, my brother, especially my middle brother, he got bullied in school. And even, like, he had really bad asthma when he was younger. Mm. And he got locked in a cupboard for, like, 5-6 hours, yeah, just because he was, like, black. So, yeah.
So there was a overt racism towards you guys as little kids.
There was, obviously. I don't know, it's even when I go there now and everyone's staring at me and my brothers, and then it's like, I ask my auntie, like, why they're all looking, and it's like, oh, because you're special.
But there you go, because like, you're special.
That's what I mean, but when I was younger, I didn't realise what was going on, but like I said, I guess it's because they're just not used to seeing them sort of faces.
So you moved to Chatham, Kent.
Chatham, Kent, that's
right. And you say where you live is... Are you saying it's quite rough there as well?
No, I said when I first moved to Luton Road.
Oh, to Luton Road, yeah.
It weren't the best. No, I wouldn't say it's...
Did you have to look after yourself?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just not a nice area, innit? And, yeah, I'm just... Yeah,
but just that all helped you have that sense of... Being able to look after yourself physically is what I mean. Does it even mentally?
Yeah, we never really was allowed out anyway. So
really?
Yeah. No, my mum and dad was literally just bookwork, studying. So yeah, and then obviously strolled to the gym, St Mary's Boxing Club, which is on Luton Road, and then yeah, it was just that was mine and my brother's excuse to get out of learning. So. Yeah, we just went to the boxing gym and I ain't regretted it.
I love the fact that you neither drink nor smoke.
No.
That you have studied. You're still studying or not? Have you given it up?
No.
You did it to A-level?
So I got my GCSEs and then I went to go for my, is it A-levels?
Yes.
Or what did you do in sixth form?
A-levels.
Yeah, A-levels.
Or your... practical course or whatever it be. But I hear you're very bright in school.
No, I was. And then I went forward to go for my A-levels. And so basically I was preparing for the European Championships. And I missed a couple of days of school. And then after the Europeans, when I came back, they basically kicked me out because I never turned up. So it is what it is. I'll just say boxing is my life now.
You're managed by Francis Warren.
That's right.
Who says you are the thing. He's investing a lot in you, believes that you are the future of the heavyweight division. Francis is vastly experienced in the sport. He's grown up with it with his father, Frank.
Of course.
Under whom you fight as a promoter, who we're going to speak to in a minute. You're in a great position, aren't you?
Very good position. I'm grateful for the position I'm in, and I'm 100% blessed because, like, there's talent all across the world. Like, I've been to the World Championships, been to the Europeans, and I've seen talent in Russia, Germany, Uzbekistan, and all these other countries that don't get to see, like, what it's like to be a professional or whatever, because their country don't have it. And yeah, I definitely am in blessed shoes to be able to box in front of thousands of people.
What's the best piece of advice that Francis Warren has given you so far?
Just be yourself. Be yourself, but I don't know.
You're a very modest young man. I've met you probably 5, 6, 7 times now. You were out in Poland at the weekend.
Yep.
To me, it looks like you're totally, this is what Francis tells me as well, you are totally invested in this being your life. Nothing else matters.
Yeah, of course. Like, I feel like I give my life like cycles. So it's like, I believe like just 2 years, obviously, to beat the Mike Tyson record. I just like to think, if I do that, that's my career done. Obviously, it's not going to be, but I just feel like this is my last.
It's a target.
It's my 2 years. I need to go hard. Like one of my friends, Emilion, he said, "You're only 20 years, 4 months, and 22 days. Once you're never gonna be that again." So it's like, go hard or go home.
That's the age, of course, that Mike Tyson first won the world title, and Moses is going to try and emulate, if not defeat that. I think that takes you, is it May 2025?
Yeah, around that time.
And Francis Warren, Frank Warren are going to try and get you to that position. We'll go into that in more detail after this interview with Frank Warren. We're back next with Frank Warren on the Zoom. Welcome back to Fight Club here. I'm Gareth Davis via Boxing Social. Joining us now, Hall of Fame promoter Frank Warren, who was obviously middle, centre and front of the events on Saturday night in Poland. Very unhappy with the decision by Luis Pabon de Puerto Rico, the referee, to allow Alexander Usyk to recover in that fifth round. Frank, as the dust settles, thank you so much for joining us as always. You're very unhappy with what happened in the ring on Saturday night and the decisions from referee Pabon.
Yes, I am. I'm very unhappy because it was a legitimate blow. A lot of people who think it was a low blow have gone by the fact that it hit the belt line of his shorts, and that is not what it's all about. It should be below the navel, and his shorts were high. Usyk's shorts were high, and that was a legitimate blow. I think Joe Cortez, who's a very, very experienced referee, he's a neutral in the whole subject. He came out today. I think he's refereed nearly 200 world title fights and said that was a legitimate punch, and it was. There's lots of backup material, and I've sent a lot of them to you, Gareth, mm-hmm. because obviously your initial opinion was, or your opinion still may be, that it was a low blow, which I fiercely disagree with. And I asked you, you said you'd seen some footage, and you sent me, I think it was one sort of bit of footage of a punch. It was put together by it sounded like a Ukrainian who put it together, and it shows this punch, and if you look at it as a photograph, it looks like the punch has landed, but it hadn't landed, and they don't show it right to the end. All they've done, they've showed a punch before it got to the shorts, and it looks like it's a low blow. You look on all the other things, when you look at the momentum of the punch, it comes all the way through, and it hits him on the band. It was not a low blow. And, you know, with Usyk, it's not like he's... and it's only since this I've sort of really looked at it. I mean, I studied his fights. And before the fight, my big thing with the fight with the camp was, look, you've got to go for his body. He's very vulnerable there. I know he's vulnerable. But I look back at the at his last few fights since the fight on Saturday. And, for example, he went down against Beterbiev. He went down against Levitt in 2011, Megidov.
In the amateurs.
And he complained about low blows. He did the same thing with Anthony Joshua, yeah. which he complained was a low blow. And coincidentally, the referee for that fight was Pabon, the same referee. But if you go to the rules, and because this one, although he holds 3 belts, the defense was the turn of the WBA. It was their mandatory. And if you go to their rules, Rule 30 says protector. It says a protector brackets belt and cup shall be required for boxers participating in sanctioned fights. The protector shall not exceed the navel or the superior anterior iliac spine. The trunks go 1 inch over the protector. Boxers should have the trunks and protector available at the weigh-in ceremony so that supervisor or referee may approve or disapprove them. Before beginning the fight, the referee will verify that both contenders use their protectors below the navel. Well, first of all, he didn't do that. You look in the ring, he doesn't say anything to them about protectors. Nothing at all. And Daniel took his shorts to the... Or his shorts were taken along to the rules meeting, which is the day before the fight, which takes place after the weigh-in. And also in Daniel's dressing room, the referee did not even discuss that. Don Charles brought it to his attention. It's on film. And Don says to him about him wearing his shorts tight. And his shorts were not, they were much, much more than an inch above his navel. There's no doubt about that, unless he's got the highest navel in the world.
So your feeling is that, based on all this evidence, that you feel you've been wronged, you've said it's a nonsense, you want justice, you're quoted widely as saying that today, that it split the boxing world, obviously, people feeling it's borderline. I felt it was borderline, that Pabon may have made a mistake. There's no question about that. Will you make a full appeal to the WBA then, with documentary evidence?
Absolutely, we've got documents, we've got a load of film, loads and loads of films and photos to back it up. You should send me the one yesterday. No one else has sent me another thing. The only other one was from, was he named Dan Raphael?
Saying it was the wrong punch. Low blow, he got the wrong punch.
It weren't even the right punch. I mean, God, mind you, what would he know about a waist level or a waistline? and the other thing is what the referee didn't do. He didn't even, he just straight away and said low blow to Usyk and just give him that rest. He done that straight away, which I found very strange.
Just and Usyk, you milked it then with him in many ways.
Oh, of course, not much. Jesus, are you sure? Milked it. I mean, he didn't get hit in the balls, did he?
No.
So he milked it. He absolutely milked it for 3 minutes and 46 seconds. Like 20, nearly 24 times the amount of time you'd get for a count, a 10-second count. That's what he did. And Usyk said yesterday in an interview, if the referee had said gone on, if the referee had counted, he'd have got up. He said that yesterday. That's and he would have done, because otherwise he'd have lost the fight.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. And obviously it's funny, most of the people who say it was a low blow are the usual haters. They either don't like Queensbury or like me, it's the usual faces. So I'm very, very disappointed with that and the outcome of the fight. And I think it took a lot of momentum away from Daniel, and it took a lot of his spirit away, to be quite honest. He had a couple of good moments in that fight. I knew it was going to be a tough fight for him from the start, but I knew that once he could settle down and he could find his range and let those body shots go, I believed he would get to him. I mean, I said before the fight, I really genuinely believed he would stop him if he caught him, and he did catch him, and it should have been a stoppage. But look, it is what it is. But coming away from that part of it, Daniel's also now got to look back at that fight and, realise you can't feel sorry for yourself. It didn't go his way. Referee did it, so you should have stepped on the gas. And he didn't do that. He didn't do that. I know he was disheartened, but that's not what it's about. You've got to grit your teeth. You've got to be Tyson Fury. Get off the floor. When you're down, grit your teeth if you're not badly hurt and get yourself back into it. And anyway, that's a lesson to be learned. And I think he's in the same position, really, in some ways, as Joshua is in. But thankfully, he's a younger man, so he's got a chance to turn this around. But the most important part of this fight is that this was a out-and-out wrong and diabolical decision.
So you will present evidence to the WBA. You hope it gets overturned and a rematch is not necessarily overturned, but they order a rematch. That's what they would do potentially, or they could order a no contest if they think Pabon has made a catastrophic error. If that happens, obviously there's a rematch. unless Usyk vacates the belt, which he could do as well. What happens though if you? And I'm not. I'm just positing this out there because it's a natural question. If that doesn't happen, will Usyk face Tyson Fury next in America, in the United, in the Middle East, or will he face Hrgović next?
We can't fight him in the free places.
Yeah, I've gone too far. That
I'm a joke.
For some reason, I had United Arab Emirates in my head, but obviously it's Saudi Arabia. So,
the objective of Satty was the winner of the fight would be in a unification fight with Tyson sometime next in the first quarter of next year. That was the objective. It's still the objective to get the unification on. So, if we can get a resolution quickly on this situation with the WBA, get a rematch on, they could probably do that in December.
Yeah, makes sense. Final one, Frank, today, and thank you so much for your time. Moses Itauma here in the studio with me. Future of the heavyweight division?
I think he's got a fabulous future. I mean, you know, he's 18 years of age. He's got a long way to go yet, obviously, because of his age, but he's got a great work ethic. He wants it. I know he wants it, and I've got a lot of faith in him. And I think that he can go all the way, provided he sticks to his regime. Provided, it's with the greatest respect, he listens, because we don't know what it's all about when we're young. I certainly didn't. I'm still 71. I still don't know what it's all about. But I think we've got to work out, you know, if he allows me to do what I'm good at doing, and certainly let him and his manager Francis do what they do between them, and certainly the most important work in the ring with Moses, I generally think he can get gold away. I mean, he's a very exciting fighter. And there is one more thing before we go, and I don't want to overlook a great performance on Saturday night, Hamza Shiraz.
Yes, yes.
That was a fabulous, fabulous performance. In the other guy's backyard, undefeated fighter, Ukrainian, front all that crowd, he absolutely took him to school and destroyed him.
Fantastic, he did indeed. A very, very exciting middleweight prospect, this Hamza Shiraz. Frank, we appreciate your time, as always, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and see you in the gym later, Moses.
See you later.
Thanks, Frank.
How come you got him out of bed so early?
I don't know, but it's good to get an 18-year-old out of bed before 9 o'clock in the morning to come to the studio, isn't it?
Well, have a good day. See you later.
Cheers, bye-bye. Frank. Frank Warren there joining us to discuss the controversy in Poland at the weekend. Quick one, Moses. Being promoted by someone like Frank Warren with his vast experience, over 40 years in the game, must also instill great confidence in you.
Yeah, 100%. Like, obviously, with Frank Warren, like you said, over 40 years of experience, like, he obviously must know what he's doing. So it's good to know that there's someone like him.
And you hear his passion there for his fighter when he feels that his fighter was wronged. That's great to have that in your corner.
Of course, of course. Like you said, it's very good.
Moses Itauma, Frank Warren. Up next, another promoter involved, Mick Hennessy, one of the legends of British boxing promoting. His daughter, Fran Hennessy, trained by Bradley Skeet, joins us. Welcome back to Fight Club here on Boxing Social. I'm Gareth Davis. Moses Itauma here in the studio with me. But joining us now on the Zoom, a legend and a legend to be, I reckon. Bradley Skeets, trainer of Fran Hennessy, daughter of Mick Hennessy. First of all, welcome to Fight Club, guys.
Thanks, Gareth.
Nice one, Gareth.
That's a pretty cool shot there for you guys. Are you do you train outdoors in the kind of botanical garden or something?
Yeah, we do sometimes. We mix it up a little bit.
Let me come to you first, Fran. I've met you Your father, Mick Hennessy, who I've known for 30 years, is a formidable boxing promoter. I never thought he'd be saying to me, wait till my daughter turns pro, I've got something very special here. How on earth, knowing the complexities of boxing and what it takes to do it, have you ended up in boxing?
To be honest, I'm actually not quite sure, because my dad and mum were very against me boxing, but you know, I kept like pushing them to box. I've been around it my whole life, so here we are.
How old were you when you first started kind of making the shapes, if you like?
Well, from what I remember, when I was in nappies, me and my brother were sparring in the hallway. So, the first time I properly started boxing, I'd say, was about 12, 13. So, yeah.
And obviously your brother boxes as well, Hennessy Jr. So it's incredible, really. Bradley, obviously we've seen you, I want to say it's, I reckon you've had a 15-year career as a pro, something like that.
Round about, just about that, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably not going to box pro again. You don't.
Never say never, but...
There you go. But we've seen you length and breadth of the country, abroad. You're one of the kind of stalwarts of British boxing, highly respected. Talk to me about Fran and how you've got involved in training her. And because I've seen the footage, I've spoken to many people in the background, and people aren't just saying she's here to take part, they're saying she's going to take over.
Yeah, nah, she's going to be a superstar. She's, trust me, like you said, I've been around boxing a long time, and I've seen the likes of boys and girls, women boxing, and Fran's going to be a superstar. From when I first started working with her to now, the improvement and the rise she's made and the development she's made in this time has been unbelievable. Please believe me, she's going to light up women boxing.
Talk to me about the skill set involved here with Fran then.
We just gelled naturally. I first of all started training Michael. Come and we had a few sessions together, and Fran was obviously part of his. She's Michael's brother, obviously, and she come to the gym. But I first of all started training Michael, and then done some sessions with Fran. She had a national final coming up, and I was helping her out for that. And she boxed on Real and won that. And then it just developed naturally. We just started working together, gelled naturally, and she'd come with that natural flair and that natural ability anyway. So I just tweaked it, added my bits to it, and like I say, from then till now, we're just going from strength to strength, and it's getting better and better. But naturally, she's got it. There's just something about her, she's got it. But it just goes back through all the years of Mick obviously not wanting her to box, and she's just sitting down watching Michael and learning that way. Because there's a funny story to tell. Michael was out sparring and Fran was in the gym, and they had a girl in the gym, and the girl needed sparring, but Mick was like, nah, Fran's not sparring, she hasn't got no staff or anything. And then out Fran pulls a gum shield and gloves and head guard, and that Mick didn't even know she had it, and gets in and does really well. So it goes back all them years, so naturally she's got something about her.
Have you had to keep it a secret from mum and dad for a while, or did you keep it, did mum know and dad didn't know?
No, my mum was more against it than my dad, I think. He always thought I had potential, but he was just kind of holding off a bit, because obviously I'm his daughter, you know, he doesn't really want to see me get punched. But I was just following them around, watching what they was doing, practicing on my own in the mirror and stuff. And then once I eventually like got in there, he was a bit shocked, because he could see that I'd been practicing everything he'd been teaching Michael. So that's how it all kind of happened.
You have a very aggressive style with very fast hands. Caroline Dubois springs to mind. Oscar De La Hoya springs to mind. Fast hands, fast feet, aggressive knockout artist is the way I see you. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've definitely got fast hands, fast feet. I've got an entertaining style. You know, I'm not the normal style. I don't just put my hands up and come like... I have my hands down, I move, and yeah, so I'm not your normal style. I'm definitely there to entertain people.
The pro debut's been announced. When are we going to see you in action?
So it's the 30th of September at the York Hall, and yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to show people my skills.
It's one of those special places, the York Hall. You've been there as a spectator before?
Yeah, my brother fought there recently, and obviously I've seen so many different fights at the York Hall. It's a very iconic place.
When you look at women's boxing right now, who do you, I don't mean look up to, but who do you see as the pathfinders for us all in the sport?
Definitely Savannah Marshall. She's been a massive inspiration to me since I've been a young girl, you know. Actually, she could potentially have been one of the reasons I did get into boxing, you know. I saw the way my dad and Peter Fury were with Savannah, and it kind of showed me that this, I can do this when I get older. And yeah, she's a person, not only a great fighter, she's a great person, and she's definitely someone I really look up to.
Do you think women's boxing is very different to men's boxing? There seems to be less trash talk, less pushing and shoving at weigh-ins. It regarded more of a sport than, or regarded as sport by women, whereas men have a different feel going into it. Are you going to take over or not?
Yeah, I believe I will take over eventually. Obviously, I'm still young, but I definitely believe I'm going to be one of the best in this game. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in it. I think women's boxing, as you said, a bit more as a sport where, I don't know, obviously you do still get the odd push and shove, you know, when, like the Savannah Marshall versus Clarissa Shields and Alicia Baumgardner versus Michaela Mayer, there's a little bit of, like, you know, controversy there.
There's a lot more trash talk, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So I believe it might start coming like that in women's boxing, but look, I like it to just, it's just a sport, isn't it? At the end of the day, we're all here to do the same thing, so.
What's the best piece of advice Mr. Skeet's given you so far?
Just, I take a lot from his experience. You know, when Brad talks, I definitely listen to everything he says, because Brad, he's a great fighter, still is a great fighter. We mess about in the gym and stuff, and you see, like, he's just a natural, and I feel like that's coming off on me. But yeah, as I said, everything Brad tells me, I listen to. You know, in middle of rounds, if, you know, he'll tell me, I'll take a round off, don't get hit, you know, move around, just, and for me, that's a great bit of advice, because people think, oh, you just need to get into a tear up, and it's, but I'll go into spars and try not to get hit and obviously hit back, but if I need to take a round off, I'll just practice on my movement and things like that. But yeah, for me, everything Brad tells me, I definitely listen to.
Final one, Brad, did you ever think you'd be training a female boxer in this sport, and what's your view on the way women's boxing's developing?
Yeah, women's boxing is booming at the minute. It's massive. It's thriving. And I can see it just getting from strength to strength and getting bigger and bigger. So I've been around women boxing, but like when I was on GB and that, the women were just coming through then. And obviously the likes of Nicola Adams and the Katie Taylors and that. So I've been around it. So it's massive. But obviously for me to train one, it's big for me too, because it's a great opportunity. Especially the likes of Fran, from when I first seen her, I knew about her from before, but then when Michael come and I see her in action for myself, like I was blown away, and I just knew she had something about her, and to work with her and the journey's going to be amazing, and I'm really excited and looking forward to being a part of it and watching her grow from strength to strength and going all the way, because like I say, she's going to be a superstar.
Great stuff, Brad. Fran, we look forward to your debut at the York Hall, Bethnal Green, September the 30th. Guys, thanks so much for joining us on Fight Club.
Thank you, cheers, for having us, Gareth.
Cheers, Brad. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Lovely.
See you later.
Cheers. Cheers. Fran Hennessy there. Cheers. Fran Hennessy and Bradley Skeet there. Moses, women's boxing is booming. Are you a fan of women's boxing?
No, of course. It's definitely thriving at the minute. Yeah, like he said, the likes of Nicola Adams and Caroline Dubois, and obviously, well, is Nicola retired?
Nicola's retired, oh, yeah. Tasha Jonas, all these guys, they're doing fantastic things.
I used to, I can't lie, I think my favourite woman boxer though is Ellie Scottney though. I've been watching, she used to come to my gym to spar one of the girls, and yeah, she's hard as nails. No, she's good.
Absolutely, she is.
And she's a world champion as well, isn't she? So,
she is indeed.
And Caroline, very good also. Like, I was on the England squad with her and everything, so yeah, the death are thriving.
We're back after the break with more on Moses Itauma and his life in boxing. Welcome back to Fight Club here on Boxing Social. I'm Gareth Davis. In the studio with me today, the man mountain, still only 18, Moses Itauma. I say still only 18 because you're after this record, Moses, of becoming the youngest heavyweight champion ever, quicker than Mike Tyson, who was 20 years, 4 months, and 22 days.
That's right.
That takes you to May 2025.
Yeah.
Is that a pressure on you to do that? To get there within, where are we?
Just under 2 years.
Just under 2 years. Yeah. When, in which time you could probably have had another 15 fights, maybe?
Yeah, of course. Like, I guess it does put a little bit of pressure on me, but I'm not really bothered because at the end of the day, I don't fight for no one apart from me and my family. And yeah, the Mike Tyson record, like I said, I think it would make me the biggest star in boxing since Mike Tyson if I do beat that record.
You're in brilliant hands
when I beat that record.
When, there you go, when not if. You're in brilliant hands with Francis Warren managing you, Frank Warren promoting you, as he said. You know, he loves the fact, it's given him a lease of life that you've got this challenge, he's got this young heavyweight who could really go to the top. Obviously, he's got Tyson Fury. He's got Daniel Dubois, he's got other fighters, so many great heavyweight fighters. You chose Dan Woolwich Jr. as your coach. What was the reasoning behind that?
Trainer? Down the St. Mary's boxing gym when I first walked into, there was like 4 or 5 coaches there. And Dan Woolwich, like, even after COVID, that I was still training with Dan Woolwich Senior, and then when I turned professional, Dan Woolwich Senior was with my brother, and Dan Woolwich Junior was also on GB, boxed for England, had like 85, 90 amateur fights, so he definitely knows his way around the sport, and he became my main trainer, and Dan Junior my hand up. Second, sorry.
You're still a teenager. It beggars belief for me to say that. You're a teenager. Is it tough doing all the media responsibilities? I mean, I had to literally drag you here to get to the... I didn't really. Yeah. But it's not easy, I imagine, because you have to project yourself. You know it's a sport of hype and promotion. All your stuff in the ring is what talks for itself anyway.
Of course.
But the outside stuff's important as well. Are you learning about that?
Yeah, of course. I always give myself 3 strikes. So if I do something wrong, 3 strikes, then I've got to punish myself in some sort of way.
How do you do that then?
I don't know. I haven't been nothing on 3 strikes.
Put your boots on and go for a run or...?
No, I don't know. I haven't thought of anything yet. But I feel like with the media and all this and that, I'm just learning with it. Like you said, I'm only 18. I'm young, so I'm learning with not even just media, with life in general. Obviously, if I'm 28 and I'm still making the same mistakes, then that's a problem. But as of right now, I have took a lot of pressure on myself because my excuse is I'm young, dumb, and you know the rest. But it is.
What's your cheat day then? When you have a day off, what's your cheat day? What do you do? What do you eat? What do you go and do? What do you watch? What do you see? How do you dance? How late do you stay out? All those things.
No, I don't really have cheat days. Like,
really?
Yeah, like, it's even with camps. Like, I'm not really in camp. Like, when I'm boxing, it's just like every day of my life is like a camp, if you get what I mean. So,
really? Every day of your life is camp? That's how dedicated you are?
Pretty much. So, like, obviously, I have rest days, but it's like my training from when I'm not boxing and when I am boxing, it's completely the same. It's just my training would be more intense. Mm. So I still train twice a day every day, apart from Tuesdays and Saturdays. Like everything, I have S&Cs the same day, my boxing sessions, my runs. Actually, I leave the runs out.
But you don't like running?
I hate running, but it's one of them things you got to do.
Is that on the treadmill or is that on the roads?
It depends.
5 a.m. in the rain with the hood up?
Depends.
Rocky style?
No, you know what? It's 4 a.m. actually.
Is it really? 4 a.m?
Yeah, but I don't go to sleep, so it's a bit different. But yeah, even when I was a kid, I used to wake up before school, used to go running, me, my brothers, Lewis Southgate and Sam Dawson, we all used to meet at my house, 10K run. Before
it's
school,
it's phenomenal.
It's crazy, and I remember my brother, he always used to speed up, and obviously made me keep up with him. And I just remember one time I started crying because obviously I didn't know my way home, and
lost in the dark.
And he just sped up, so I had to literally keep up with him. And I was literally like I said, 10, 11 years old. So yeah, times changed now, and yeah, I do running, treadmill, and road, depends.
Do you, obviously there's this Mike Tyson record, are you projecting towards that, but do you play computer games at home? How do you actually relax? What do you do?
No, I'm not really.
No, not computers. Not really, so no. What are you doing to relax? You into music, movies, what is it?
I don't know, I just chill.
Really? You literally just chill?
I haven't got a clue, I'll probably go to a restaurant, probably go shopping. Cinema, I don't know.
Are you saying you're boring?
I am a little bit. I need to spice up my life a little bit, innit?
I don't think so. I think you're doing absolutely the right thing. You can have a long life after boxing.
That, exactly. Like you was asking me, like if I do I drink or do I do this? I feel like there's a time and place, and at the minute, I don't think the right time is to do any of that stuff. Like a lot of my mates as well that I grew up with were very good boxers, but now they ain't boxing no more, and obviously I don't want to mention what they're doing, but I feel like I can just do that after boxing. Like I can make more money or build my career and legacy.
Do your travelling, have your children afterwards.
And then when I'm 30, 40 year old, then I can start doing madnesses. But as of right now,
I don't think you will.
I don't know. It's only time can tell, innit? But as of right now, I don't believe like should be doing any of that stuff anyway.
Do you always find, or do you find that having discovered this thing you love in your life and these aims, that it is actually a blessing to have it, that it is a pathway that has stopped you having to go down different routes to discover? You almost know who you are at a young age. Francis says, your manager, Francis says, he's 18, but he's got a 28-year-old head on him. And it does seem like that.
Yeah, no, the only reason why that is because like I've never really been, like growing up with the boys down the gym, that was never my age. Like I had probably my best friend Tyrone growing up. Mm. He was the only one my age that I used to speak to. Everyone else was my brother's age or older. So you can say that I'm mature for my age. But yeah, like you said, I've got an old head on the young. Actually, I've got an old body as well, so literally my shoulder's been killing me because I slept on the wrong side, so literally like my coach said as well, I'm getting old.
Do you dream, do you visualise a lot the future?
No, because I don't think that visualising the future is going to get you anywhere. It's like, I do it when I'm running, okay, or like when I'm training.
Yeah.
But like apart from that, like you don't just think, like I don't believe in none of the manifestation and all this. I just believe like you gotta go out and work, because there's no good me sitting at home praying for a Lamborghini and Lamborghini's not gonna be outside. So yeah, like,
oh, so you like a bit of bling then? You like a little bit of
I'm more of a classy guy. Like I was just an example. I know people like Lamborghinis, I'm more of a Bentley type. So
Jaguar?
No, not really.
Oh, you won't like my old Jag sitting outside then. Tell me about this story. This is what fascinates me. You were so into it. We know what a behemoth, what a giant Joe Joyce is. You would leave school when you were 15, 3 years ago, 3 years ago, 15,
it's mad.
To spar with Joe Joyce after school.
Yeah.
But how did that come about?
No, so obviously I had to spar with Joe Joyce, but then I had to get ready for my GCSEs. So my coach was like, right, I need to pick you up at this time from school and we'll go straight to sparring. And I was like, yeah, but I'll go home and get my stuff. He was like, no, I'll take your boxing stuff to school. So literally, I turned up to school with all my boxing stuff and everything and went straight to Joe Joyce's gym in North London. And yeah, turned up in my school clothes or whatnot and yeah, started sparring. It's crazy. And I remember I literally just had tests and everything and I got in the ring and I was yawning. And then Steve, his coach, he was like, oh, like, what's the problem or whatnot? I said, I had tests all day, I'm tired, and I got a spar. And then literally got in there, done my work, and yeah.
How many rounds did you do with him then?
Six, so as an amateur, enjoy it? 50. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I don't know, it's with boxing, it's not one of them things you like, enjoy.
I don't mean enjoy it, I mean, did you get a lot out of it, is what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah, of course.
Talk to me about it, without describing it in detail, was it, obviously you knew who Joe Joyce was.
What do you mean?
What did you get out of it? What did you have to do in there? Did you have to let your hands go? Were you putting pressure on him?
It's just sparring. I never really think of anything. Like, obviously, if there's a challenge, I overcome it, but I don't realise that I have, if you get what I mean. So, yeah, obviously, I get something out of every sparring session I do. I just don't realise it.
Who are the other heavyweights that we'd know you've sparred with then?
Not really a heavyweight, but Coley. He was
Lawrence Coley.
He was the first big like sparring I had. As when I was 15.
Awkward.
Yeah, very awkward, very awkward. And I was only a little kid as well. But yeah, Coley, Dubois, Joyce.
Dubois? How did you find Dubois?
Yeah, it was very
strong jab.
Yeah, very nice quick jab. Very quick jab.
We didn't see it enough on Saturday night.
No, we didn't. Yeah, so it was preparation for the European Championships, Shane McGuigan. I think this was when he was meant to spar, he was fighting the New Zealand guy or the Australian guy in his the fight when Fury boxed. Yeah, so he had a southpaw and obviously Shane McGuigan asked me for sparring and I was like, yeah, why not? And yeah, we've done loads around.
Fury yet? Tyson Fury?
I'd love to. And he's even said that if he ever gets to fight with Usyk.
Southpaw.
Yeah, he said if he ever gets it. So
we can expect you to fight next and then spar with Tyson Fury in the lead up to the Usyk fight.
Yeah, 100%. I'm 100% down, but like I said, is this fight ever going to pull off?
Oh, I think it will.
I hope
too much money, too big a fight, too era defining.
I hope it does.
Do you beat Usyk now?
Yeah, I believe so. Like I said, I was sitting in that fight, I was watching the fight, thinking I can beat these both. And even when I got home, like all my mates goes, "What'd you reckon of the fight?" And I say, I tell him what I reckon. He's like, "You'd beat both of them now." And you know what I mean? So even my brother, he said it as well. So yeah, I do believe I can beat both of them. But like I said, I've got to get through these challenges that I've got now in my way.
Anthony Joshua?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, it's gonna be a little bit tougher as well. But like I said, I do believe so.
Won't meet these guys in your era, most likely.
I believe though. I could. I reckon I could. What within? If you think if in 2 years, if I want to beat that record, I believe I will meet some of them.
Do you think Usyk and Dubois will be? Do you think Usyk and Joshua and Wilder will still be around in 2 years' time?
I don't know.
I'm not sure they will. You know,
we'll see, innit? We'll see.
And if you're progressing fast, I'm not sure they'll want to step in the ring with you at that point because they'll be starting to become old men by then.
If they don't think that they can win, they're in the wrong sport. Well, they wouldn't be in the sport if they don't think they can win because, listen, like Floyd Mayweather said, every fighter's got to believe that he's the best. If not, then they're in the wrong sport.
That is called self-belief. I'm here with Moses Itama. Up next, Dr. Mohamed Eniat joins me. He's going to speak to me about the situation for Conor Benn and Clomiphene. Fascinating stuff. He has detailed and explored forensically and has the theory scientifically that Conor Benn consumed clomiphene through food, not a banned substance. Up next. Welcome back to Fight Club here on Boxing Social. I'm Gareth Davis. Moses Itauma, the young heavyweight sensation, in the studio with me. But we're joined now by Dr. Mohamed Inayat, who is the founder of Human, as you can see on his green shirt, but Human with a two in it. Great to see That's you, great. Doctor. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. I'm very well today. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Let me ask you, first of all, about the company. What are you doing there with Human?
Yeah, so basically we're a healthcare clinic that helps all of our patients be the everyday athlete to perform in their day-to-day lives. We do real deep personalized testing. We call it personalized medicine, where we find your personal imbalances through testing. We correct them through lifestyle, nutrition, and supplement strategies. And then we also have within the clinic a suite of therapies that are very safe, things like high-pressure oxygen therapy. You might have seen the likes of Djokovic, Ronaldo use these devices, whole-body cryotherapy, ozone therapy, intermittent hyperoxic, hypoxic training. Basically, I find devices and technologies from around the world that help people perform the best they can. And then over the last couple of years, we've been starting to work with more and more athletes who are looking to find ways that they can improve their performance, but in a safe, effective, natural way.
Sounds like a sci-fi movie.
Oh man, I love it. I really do enjoy it. I've been a doctor for 15 years. I still work as a GP part-time. And so for me, being a scientist by nature, it's real. It is sci-fi. I feel like pinch myself that I get to do this, and I get to create a type of healthcare that makes such a huge difference to people.
Obviously, you have a resonance at the moment, a prevalence in boxing because of your scientific investigations into Conor Benn's situation with clomiphene. Let me ask you, first of all, you've analysed his situation with clomiphene, and you've come up with findings that help him in this situation.
That's right. I mean, he was introduced to me long after the hearing. So I first came across Conor in March, April, just to work with him for his wellness. And we first did our screening bloods, and in our screening bloods, we look at imbalances, not just for something that's really wide outside of normal medical ranges. We found in that initial set of bloods some imbalances in his hormones, something we call estrogen dominance, and we're seeing that a lot in society, in men who are having higher estrogen than they should have. And that the reason, there's a bunch of reasons I won't go into, but essentially because of our environment that we live in now, we have a lot of hormone disruptors coming through the foods that we eat and toxins that we consume in society. That led me on to then do some more detailed testing, genetic testing, to look for, is there any specific pathways within his detoxification genes that means that he cannot remove estrogen or hormones as well as someone else? Because that has an implication on how he feels, how he operates day to day. And lo and behold, he had a double mutation, which is a strong mutation in the gene that's specific for removing or recycling estrogen. And also subsequently found out it's also related to clomiphene. So for us at that point, we were like, okay, there's a reason why he accumulates clomiphene more so than others. And I presented that back to him, and Rene Carriol, who's, he was working with him at the time, introduced me to Conor. And then we suggested that could this be a reason why he's accumulating? We weren't concerned at that point of how it got there. We then went to find the experts in clomiphene pharmacology, people that had worked in Institute of Doping, two scientific experts, and we presented the VADA test results, the actual amounts of clomiphene that presented in his urine, the actual breakdown products of the specific type of clomiphene that was found in his urine, the amounts, and also the information that we had, the blood test results. And everyone concluded conclusively that the amount and the type of clomiphene that was found in his urine were consistent with the type of clomiphene that is found when chicken are injected with clomiphene so that they produce more eggs, and therefore coming through eggs, rather than a different type of breakdown of clomiphene that's produced when you directly ingest it as a human being. And it's on the basis of all of that information that we presented this, and we took this forward, because we now had a real rationale and reason as to why he tested positive for very small amounts. And we feel like this was a quite a breakthrough in looking at doping, particularly with clomiphene in athletes.
So just to reiterate then, you can categorically say from your scientific research that the clomiphene that was found in his VADA tests is consistent with a consumption of food and definitely not with a pill, if you like, that would contain clomiphene.
Absolutely. From all of the studies that have been conducted to date, there has been one quite a monumental study which showed and compared the oral ingestion from adults of clomiphene to dope, and they tested the urine of those versus a number of participants that had eggs that had been injected with clomiphene, and they had different types of breakdown products in their urine. And the VADA test that Connor had shows that the metabolites of the clomiphene that he tested positive for were consistent with those of those participants that had it from eggs. So, you know, in all, there's a lot of supportive evidence here, which is quite unshakable in many ways. I believe, you know, I'm not a doping expert as per se, but we have the doping experts that we brought on to kind of to help us on this journey of understanding, really, this more and more. And everyone that we've spoken to, the experts in the space, you know, have suggested and, you know, conclude that this is consistent with oral ingestion from eggs.
Do you believe then, and you don't have even the fact he's a client, but you don't have any grounds
for... There's no agenda.
There's no agenda, exactly. Do you believe that this evidence will get him exonerated within strict liability on clomiphene?
I believe it should do, yes.
Yeah.
It should be considered. It needs to be considered. It needs to be heard. And it needs to be presented. And we're hoping to speak with UCAD. They've asked for us to wait until they've concluded their hearing before they'll speak to us, because they're in discussion with Connor's legal team at the moment. And so they said, once we've concluded with that, we're happy to, we want to engage with this, which we feel this has a kind of a bigger implication for the way we test in sports. We need to consider individuals' biology, and this is the move within healthcare that's happening, that we're on the crest of a wave of that. You know, we no longer need to treat everyone the same when we now have the science has evolved to be able to understand you as an individual. You, Gareth, why do you have certain health conditions, or why are you testing positive for this? And to consider that in the full context.
So, Dr. E, finally, do you believe that your findings are groundbreaking in that, and I'm kind of reiterating what you've just said there, but encapsulating it, that we may have to look at the way anti-doping is done with every individual, and it may change the system and the way that they do test and the way the labs test?
Absolutely. I think we need to be testing someone's bloods.
Not just their urine. How about my advocacy is, when someone turns pro or when someone joins the professional ranks, that you have a blood passport, if you like, that's tested regularly throughout your career, maybe even every few weeks, that's homogenous through one organization, so that everybody's blood is tested. Is that possible, if you had a blood passport, to check on whether there's changes?
Yeah, absolutely, because currently in doping, we're just testing the urine, and we're looking for breakdown products of certain things. And we don't have the full context of that individual's health. And all, you know, we should be testing their blood work for all of their hormones, their micronutrients, their deficiencies. We're going to find people that have pre-diabetes. We're going to find people that have excess stress response. I mean, I've worked with athletes, some of the most elite athletes, and they're breaking out with cold sores and having immune, you know, they're getting the cold and the flu the week of their fights. And this shouldn't be the case. You know, medicine and sports medicine is all about getting someone physically in the right space, but not generally in their health state in the right space to be able to be safe in the ring. And then also to be safe after the fight or after the event.
Absolutely. And, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I think we're going to see big changes with the advancements in science and technology, really.
Yeah, I think we have to embrace them because they can transform the way that athletes' health is during, and we also need to consider the long-term health of our athletes. You know, all of the, especially in the fighting industry, they take a lot of damage, and we need to be caring for our athletes to make sure that we're minimizing the impact of that damage, but ensuring that they're the healthiest going in and then the healthiest coming out. And I don't think we do that enough, particularly in boxing. When we compare that to the UFC, the UFC has a fantastic performance institute. They have a methodology of testing. They have all the athletes go through functional blood testing, a bit like what we do at Human. They have access to the right supplements that they need to be on. They're just, you know, they're a lot more holistic in looking at the athlete in the short term. There is also some concerns within mixed martial arts, but that's for a separate discussion with regards to concussions. I think boxing has done very well to kind of minimize and look at concussion risk, but I think there's more that can still be done for the long-term health of the athletes, both in MMA and also in boxing.
Dr. E, absolutely incredibly fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure. Have a great day, guys.
Cheers. There's so many advancements going on in technology at the moment, and maybe testing systems need to change. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, 100%. We obviously, boxing is a hard sport as it is. We definitely need to have the clean hearts as well.
And I love the fact that he's saying when we analyse fighters, we can see the deficiencies in iron, potassium, metabolites.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Get yourself signed up.
No, I need to.
It's not only for your advancement, but maybe for your protection as well.
From just general health as well, isn't it?
General health, but also if a metabolite shows up, as he's saying with Conor Benn, showing up that clomiphene was from food consumption, there's evidence that you can go against strict liability if something does show up in the testing system.
Makes sense.
It's a complex and grey area. We're back next with this man, his career, the end. Well, what a packed show we've had today. It's back to Moses Itauma. Moses, when are you out next?
I'm out on the Joe Joyce versus Zhang 2 undercard, so in about 3 weeks. I think it's September 23rd.
So you're still hard in sparring at the moment then?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sparring tomorrow, sparring Friday. Yep.
We've taken time out from your schedule today, then we appreciate you being in the studio.
It's all good, it's all good. Like, I just got to work round training. Tuesday's my rest days anyway, but yeah, I got strength and conditioning later because I've missed so many days where I was in Poland with Daniel Dubois.
Do you have to be patient in terms of where you are at the moment? Because surely you probably feel you could be everyone. As you said earlier, you could feel you could be everyone at the moment. But do you have to be patient about your progress?
Yeah, no, 100%. I was saying to the boys yesterday that I was watching the fight thinking I can beat both of them. So
both Usyk
and Dubois. So I was just kind of irritated. But obviously, it's a good experience. And I do believe my time will come and it's right. Obviously, when God gives it the nod.
And that Mike Tyson record? Do you think about it every day?
No. I used to, not anymore, because it's like, it's a goal that's so far away. It's like, I've got to take the mini steps to get there. So, obviously, like in the Europeans or the World Championships, you're always going to think about the final. You have to get through your next opponent. So, Yeah, 100%.
Is there one thing you keep in your head the whole time that keeps you grounded and keeps you on the right track and in your lane?
No, not really. Like, I just, like, my parents instilled very good discipline in me, and I believe that's what got me to where I am now, because you're never always going to be motivated. So, like, it's just discipline that's carried me through boxing, really.
Never change. It's been brilliant to have you on the show today. We wish you all the best with your career, and we'll be following it in detail.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Moses Itauma. My thanks today to Frank Warren, Fran Hennessy, and Dr. Mohammed Enayat for being on Fight Club here on Boxing Social. We'll be back with a new series very soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.